So welcome, everybody. Tonight is the last talk. It's actually class 10 in module 24. It's hard to imagine. We've done 24 modules in this little sangha here. And so tonight is the conclusion. We're going to be covering chapter 10, but basically an overview of the book. And I'd like it to be a discussion. I first will give a few main points. I've been thinking about the book overall, and then towards the end I want to have more discussion on the topic of rebirth and where we're going with all this and why it matters. So the word karma means action, and that's a simple word, but it's pretty complicated. So for those that are new, the book title is What It Is, What It Isn't, and Why It Matters. And Joseph Crane spoke to me yesterday, and he said, well, you know, they say if you can understand the title of the book, you don't need to read it. So I thought that was pretty good. And it maybe was a clue on what we should present tonight, I thought. So we're going to talk a lot more probably about what it is. And there's a lot of information in the second chapter, which Michael Levin gave a nice talk on. But we're going to just start with, I just want to start by sort of zooming out, because it helps to say we've covered a lot of material, and there's been some more esoteric material and more philosophical material. But what the heck is this all about, and how does it really apply to me in my life and you in your life? So I'd say just briefly, the upshot of this is that you should live a good life, and you should aim to bring peace and happiness to yourself and others. If we can just hold that as a view, I think that helps us to understand the point of karma. But there's a lot more to it, as we've been studying. But actually, just even holding that simple thought, it helps us in this life to be less anxious, perhaps, and less focused, self-focused and self-concerned, and to help us be more available to others. So that expansion into the world and being of benefit. But in fact, this book goes much further than that in terms of looking at the point of karma. So karma is not just about this life, but it's also about how this life impacts the next life. And that's really a theme that is being touched on here that I definitely would like to explore further next year. More about the bardos, we barely touched on that, and more about the Buddha's view of death and dying. So that might be coming up, we'll see. So this book actually dispels some of our misunderstandings about karma, and it helps us to understand what's meant by the word karma from a Buddhist point of view. And there's some very important pointers about how to work with karma, which I'd like to just go through some of the highlights, and you can stop me at any point, and you know we'll discuss. But I'll just give the first starting point here. So it also, as I said, it introduces the topic of the next life and what is carried forward from this life to the next life. And I do want to discuss that in more detail. So in terms of the main points about karma, Trolley Rinpoche says that karma is not fixed. So it's not something that's completely firmed up or solid. So if you're born a noble, then you are always going to be a noble, or whatever it is. He gave examples of kind of Indian tradition. He talked about causes and conditions, and these causes and conditions really influence our choices and our way of being in the world. So there are causes and conditions that influence us, but then we actually have freedom to make choices. So that's the other side of this. And the point here is that we have freedom to respond to our situation, whatever arises. We can make choices about how we respond to things, whether we see them as difficult or then whether we can make it a challenge that is something we have to work with and we accept and we see it in a certain way, or whether we resist, whether we push away. So this is this separation between determinism, that things, whatever your situation is, it's fixed and there's no chance to do anything else. Or total freedom, that everything is open and there's no causes and conditions, things just are free and open. So we're not talking about one or the other specifically, but how those two work together and what the middle way is. So I was thinking about someone like Frederick Douglass. I've been reading a lot more about slavery and the conditions under which these people lived, which were really horrific, but how he was born into a situation that was slavery in the South, and how he wanted to be free of that, and he was able to find a way through and out of it. So you could say his karmic situation landed him in that particular historical time and place, but he was able to actually find a way through to his own freedom. So I think that's, you know, one example. And another one I thought of was Stephen Hawking, who, you know, had a very debilitating...
Can we stay with the first one for a second?
So, yes.
He did more than that. He not just broke through to his own freedom, he put his mark on the world such that no one can forget that he stood for freeing slaves all the time, everywhere. No, not that it's accomplished, but that everyone in the world knows what he did. He put his mark not just for himself, but for the world.
So one thing I think about a little bit. So if we're thinking about choosing a life, that someone like Frederick Douglass could say, I'm going to go do that. That's a way that I could be a bodhisattva, to be born there, like to come from that instead of, you know, I'll be a white person, I'll help people, I will actually know the suffering of these people. It's sort of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's talking more about the potential we have in a future life to be of benefit, and that our training in this life is a way to prepare for whatever comes next, and our experience and our training can, and when we go more into the bardos, can direct us to situations where we can be of benefit. Yeah.
Can I ask, how many people here believe in reincarnation or rebirth?
Rebirth. Yeah, let's make the distinction.
Whichever.
Okay. Rebirth. How many people?
In how we've been discussing it?
According to this book, how many people believe in it?
All right. Just learning
about it. Sure. But some people can come in with a good idea of rebirth. Maybe not as this defines it, but if you believe in the idea that you're going to, some aspect is going to come back. So, I think that's an important question because, I mean, I can put my hand up. The truth is I don't know. I'm just going to go on assuming that this is true. But I think something that helped me along the way as I was considering this was that I don't actually have to believe and rebirth, to believe that everything I do affects this moment.
Yeah.
And the very next one. And the next one thereafter. Because in truth, every moment is a birth and a death. So we have rebirth throughout our entire life. And if you think of it that way, then I'm just asking you to think of all of this, the concepts he's discussing here, in the terms of that. So that you don't have to believe in rebirth of coming back after dying, going through the bardo, because every moment is a bardo.
So I have a question, so I guess for Emily, since you brought it up that way, but is that kind of just being really broad about it? My sense is that's not what they're talking about. I know we have talked in other contexts about every moment, second being a
fresh start,
right? But I get the feeling that that's not what you're talking about in terms of the bardos, in terms of the strict meaning of reincarnation and all that. Am I correct on rebirth?
Rebirth. So let's make the distinction first between reincarnation. No, it's fine. Thank you for your time.
I often use that because that's what most people are not Buddhist understand the term as. And I've always saying rebirth.
But okay, let me first make the distinction, then I'll and others will chime in. So carne is meat, right? So reincarnation is basically coming back as a meat form.
If you're a vegetarian,
you'll be a carrot. What do you think?
Is your brain made of meat?
I don't know.
But the distinction is really that view, the way he describes it, is that it's like you. It's like you're an actor, you dress in one costume, then you take off that costume and you put on a new one, and that's your new life, which you think of yourself as the actor. The self is carrying forward, and your meanness, your Susan-ness, is going to go into the next life, the way you are.
Right.
But Buddhism is about rebirth, that there is a process in which the psychic energy moves forward, but it's not attached to a physical form or a body or a personality or a soul. So in Buddhism, they don't talk about a soul. It's more about karmic propensity. And the way I describe it is, and I've heard it, like if you think of a pool table, and you've got your pool stick and you hit the ball and it hits the side one way, it's going to go a certain way. I mean, it has a direction, even though you didn't go to that end point, there's an actual direction or angle it's going to hit, and it'll hit another angle. So it's like you could think of almost electricity or something that carries forward. And then in this book, Karma, he talks about carrying forward your karmic imprints. So, for instance, if you lived a life of killing people day in and day out, and you were doing lots of murder, and you were full of anger, that's created a lot of seeds, and that energy potentially could move forward. And it's not all explained here, but it doesn't mean it's the next life that there will be something that comes back to you as a backlash, you could say, from that type of activity. But we know in our daily life that when we have certain reactions, there's certain other things that happen. And Trungpa Rinpoche talked about if you're really angry and you go through a door and you slam it, and then you catch your finger in the door, that's immediate karmic retribution. So we see this all the time. He talks about if you're mad at your boss and, you know, you say bad things or whatever, you know, you get something back. So that's kind of the view.
It's also, this is, I guess, just again implied, but that karmic energy, you're saying, transfers into something living. Is that, it, is, you know, like, be it, it a human being or be it a toad or
right,
be it a...
Right, that's
you know,
the thought, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. That's different, that's additional.
It could, well, we're talking about different levels. We're talking about moment by moment, and really that's fundamentally, as Megan mentioned, mm-hmm. it's sort of the most immediate. Then there's more longer, there's a longer term view, which is why we put energy into good deeds or being of benefit and not harm. And then there's literally the body is going to die, you know. We have to come to terms with that, and we all are going to die. Nobody escapes, how rich, how whatever, except Ray Kurzweil, who I work for, and he doesn't think he's going to die. You can look it up. But in fact, he's missing
the boat. Did
you
tell him that, Emily?
No. He allowed me to go to seminary. He said, go. That'll be good for the company. So he gets some points there.
Part of the rebirth, you know, belief or story or whatever, also the, you know, like there was also the part in these chapters that talked about you have a decision, you know, about who your parents are going to be, or that's all...
That's
under the
part
label
of
rebirth.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, and I can't recall if it covers this in this, because I've done a bit of reading on Lombardo. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the first pieces you gave me, which was an printed off article you sent me about Lombardo. And according to one teacher, and I can't recall his name off the top of my head, you will only have a modicum of decision dependent upon your practice.
After you die,
that's right.
Be a
you'll
short...
be in a bardo, and the length of that bardo is dependent upon your practice. And different teachers will tell you how much time that is. And like I remember one teacher saying, it's six times the amount of time you can hold a state of pure awareness in your meditation practice. To others, just saying,
pretty short.
It's really pretty short.
Half a breath,
right? But the point being that. The more you practice, the more you are aware of your proclivities, of your habits, of the chaotic mind. And the more you're able to keep coming back to the hub instead of out in the spokes of the wheel. When you are in that bardo process, and I don't want to go too heavily into this,
right.
because you can get really
yeah,
heavy into it.
You can get lost in the bardo.
There will be a moment when you are feeling, you are felt overwhelmingly drawn to being reborn. And your ability to recognize that pull to be reborn and to be able to go essentially, boy, I'm really kind of toning this down, to go, no, not that. let's go over this way a little more. Or just like right into the body of a cricket.
Because it's a relief.
Right.
You're looking for a way into some kind of form.
Because you're
driven.
So overwhelmed by right where you are.
Space.
That space that you're just drawn to be reborn. So so how you can manage that chaos, if you will help you to forestall it, to elong it, let it be there, be with it until you find the conditions you wish to be reborn in.
And yes, and that's one point of practice is to be able to hold your seat,
yes.
you could say, and hold your mind. And when we feel kind of a panic, when we hit emptiness or egolessness, that's good news because that's all preparation for that moment. When you lose your body, and it's very hard, when your body holds, it's an anchor for your mind. So the whole package stays together. But we know when we die, when you touch that body, there's nothing moving. Somebody's dead. They are dead. So that that liberates the mind. So the mind then can just, you know,
go
everywhere and
like
can travel.
Everything.
So the point is, we meditate so we can work with our mind and have more control over that. And then, as Megan said, right after we die, there's a short period where you can apparently have a realization of your you could say the ultimate truth. We talk about that sometimes. Yeah.
And it's obviously we have no way of knowing, you know, any of this. It's all sort of theory and speculation. But
not quite.
How would you be able to say? How would any living person be able to?
That's just that it. There's been many documented records of people having gone through this process, and there was one woman teacher, who was clinically dead for 10 days. And then came back alive and wrote.
Near death experiences.
Near death.
Yes,
or death.
I don't know if you would call it near death. She had no heartbeat, nothing, and came back
for 10 days.
Yes.
10 days. I met one girl who was hardly 3 years old, and she was able to tell the story for the 1810. 1810, what happened? She was able to tell that about what the things happened at that time.
After death.
It's a rebirth. It's basically for the 3 years girl who cannot able to talk properly. And that is the talk about what happened in the 1810 somewhere.
Yeah.
So but how did you verify it? You said she talked about what happened in 1810?
Yeah, 1810, we have whatever the history happened, right? So she is able to tell now.
Can I read what
Trela
Grinpoche says, which kind of puts an end to spending time on this kind of speculation?
What page?
I'm on page.
Yeah.
What?
It's okay. We're talking. What page are you on?
146. Liberation is not secured purely through leading a good life or through the practice of meditation, but from doing both. We need to acquire wisdom, and wisdom, unlike intellect, does not arise purely from mental activity. Wisdom arises from both physical and mental activities conjoined. It is clearly distinguished from intellect in the Buddhist view. An extremely smart person may not know how to live well. A wise person, on the other hand, knows very well how to live well. A wise person knows a lot about all kinds of things, including pragmatic wisdom, how to conduct himself or herself, how to interact with others, what is the best course of action to take, what is the most beneficial thing to do for oneself and others, and so on. These faculties eventually emerge from our cultivation of ourselves. In other words, if we really take this to heart, we aren't going to settle anything tonight or any other time particularly, but if we are committed to being for the benefit of others, that will lead us to do more than just go someplace once every few weeks to make ourselves comfortable, but rather to stay with the practice, find a way to practice regularly, whatever that is, and there are all kinds of ways, and we don't have to go into that, and to work with that throughout one's life, so that one doesn't have to actually engage in any speculation at the time of death, because one is living one's life as best possible. And I'd like to take this a little bit further, if I may. Maybe each of us has already done that. That each of us has looked for how to be born in a time when we are most needed, which for many of us could be this present time. We are living in a frightful time. Even if I don't feel someone's going to shoot me today, I still live in a world which could blow up for any number of reasons. It's a pretty freaky world, and no one is in any control of it, and we don't know when any part of it, including our own part of it, could disintegrate. Yet why did each of us have the courage to be born here? Maybe we already have worked on becoming a bodhisattva. It could be that each of us, or anyone you see on the street, is already working on being the best bodhisattva he or she could. And we can look around at each other and say, are you a bodhisattva who has come back to help at this critical time? We could ask ourselves, we could ask each other, we could ask anyone we meet. why was I born here? Why was I born with the handicaps I was born with? Why was I born with the advantages I was born with? Why was I born into such a kind of a family? Why was I born where I had to fight my way out of something? Is each of those things an important lesson I had to go through to be a bodhisattva? And am I working on that now? And will I continue to work on it? Will I find teachings? Will I continue to develop myself? So look at the realm. Any one of us may be working to be a bodhisattva as hard as possible as a long-term project. And anyone you meet in the street could.
Those teachings come from...
They come from many places.
Many places, but I think in dealing with the destruction of our planet, Joanna Macy is the one that taught a lot about this. So Michael studied that quite a bit, climate change and the destruction.
I learned a lot from her. She's still alive, but I don't think I'm going to ever see her again. But yeah. I learned basically that each of us already is a bodhisattva, and we have to see why we chose to be born the way we were and what we have to do to manifest and how will we recognize another bodhisattva when we find that person, because that's not easy. We don't know what's in each other's minds, where we're going.
If I could add to that, I often think of my two personal heroes, Nelson Mandela, who spent so long in prison. And it blew my mind to think this man came out of prison and was capable of forgiving the people who put him there and healed the country. And then Mr. Rogers.
Yay.
Mr. Rogers. Who I grew up with and grew up watching. And Mr. Rogers spent a great deal of his childhood sick and in bed with no playmates. So he made up stories with his little puppets and characters, and that was what shaped him to become the storyteller and to wish to connect with children who felt isolated and alone. And I know I'm choosing two characters who we all know, two people who we all know, their names are very big, and we look at them and they're like almost they're iconic for us, and we think, well, but that's this great bodhisattva. I have no qualms calling either of them that, by the way. And it can kind of feel like that's almost unattainable for us, because these are people who have done such great things. And we may look and go, I haven't done great things like that. And one thing I like to think of is that there are people in those people's lives who will never hear their name, but they made a difference in those people's lives. They touched on those people's lives to help them get where they were able to make such an incredible change in the world. And you'll never hear about them, but they are people like all of us. So you may not be the person standing up there leading a country or creating an amazing children's show that impacts so many people, but you might touch for a moment somebody who does do that.
So one thing I thought, we haven't said what bodhisattva is, we have newer people.
Go ahead.
So yeah. Bodhisattva, the idea is when people study Buddhism and other things, initially we study because we like to feel liberated, like we like to feel like we're free from our suffering because we're not enjoying it all.
When I cry, that means that, like when you said rebirth, and Bob knows this. He's a very good friend of our family. And it's like you said, exactly what I'm going to rebirth. Trying to get back on my feet, back to my children. And I want to thank Bob. Because he's helping me do that. You people are wonderful. And my sister practices this. I think I'll bring her next week, if that's okay.
Yeah.
She's very, she needs some healing too. But as far as the rebirth statement, that I am a Catholic and not practicing, but I made my kids finish their CCD in confirmation. But my sister also has this gift, and I don't know if you guys believe in clairvoyance and medium. She told me, she did my chart one day, and she said, in your past life, I was an Indian medicine man.
She said that about you.
Yeah, and she's serious about this. But I don't know, I know you're giggling, but...
No?
No.
If it's, no. I don't mean that mean. Okay. I mean, it's silly, but...
No, it's not silly.
Like, because Catholics, we frown upon, you know, that's taboo. You can't talk about psychics or people that can tell, but, she's... And that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, I think one thing is to have an open mind. And it's not like Buddhism says, you have to believe this, you have to believe this, you have to believe that. It says, open your mind and question and look. So,
and see what's true.
And see what's true, right.
What feels true to you.
What feels true to you.
To you.
Were you going further, Elise?
Wait.
So then the idea came, it's like, I'd like to be free from my suffering. But then if you look around, you say, wow, there are a lot of people who are suffering.
Right.
And rather than be liberated, and part of liberation is you don't have to be reborn. You can choose not to be reborn, is to say, then I leave the other people behind. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to make a commitment, and several of us have done this, to say, I'm going to keep coming back until everybody else is liberated. And then when they're all liberated, then I'll stop with them. And so the idea is, my thought is, if I took the Bodhisattva vow in this lifetime, then it's not the first time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wait, I want to hear Craig. Okay.
To me, kind of the point of this, the whole karma, the whole concept is that there's no end. You know, there's no point where it's all over. You know, it's whether... your body will obviously be dead, but things are still going to be going on. The world might end, but there's still going to be things going on. And yourself is not... there is no self. And so it's just everything's going to continue. So there's no way of getting out of it. So, and that's why it matters. You know, there's not going to be a point where it's like, okay, we're done, it's all...
That's why suicide doesn't work either.
But on the other hand, it doesn't matter, because if you're, in the moment doing, being present and doing the best you can, and, trying to be just here and now, and then you don't really need to worry about, I'm going to do this because... in my next life, I'm going to, something's going to happen, or because, in the past, my past life, something didn't work out so well, and now it's not important in that way, where it's cause and effect, but, it matters, because in total, things will keep going in one way or the other, but, you don't focus on, what's going to happen whenever.
But everything matters.
Well,
thank you.
There's so much to do in this life. I mean, just to manage what we're doing now is, then have to let it take care of itself later, And I guess the only way that rebirth works for me really is to think of E equals MC squared, sort of like Craig was saying, it's all stuff. It's all energy or matter, and they become each other. And I mean, even if the world is destroyed, there'll still be a universe, maybe, and there'll be. I'm hoping I can come back as dirt, because it feels like that's living. Because I don't really want to be a frog.
That's guaranteed. They're going to be dirt, because your body's going to be dirt.
But that'd be very
that's not what your rebirth is.
Yeah, but I'm hoping
you seal yourself up in one of those tomb.
Yeah, well,
I'm, a mausoleum.
Yeah, but I don't know if that would qualify as rebirth. I'm hoping dirt qualifies as rebirth because it's alive. I mean, there's organisms in there. And,
So I want to say what Craig. I like what you were saying. I kept thinking of the expression "what goes around comes around." But usually we think of that as "what goes around comes around," like very personally, like you're bad, someone's bad to you, someone. But it's more like it's like that ripple effect. It just gets put out there, and it keeps going around. Whether you're after you die, and like whatever, which is a whole different. It's different than to me. That's different than the business of saying that I or anyone's going to choose to come back in a certain way. But what I certainly understand and have seen the going around, coming around stuff, like how everything you do has an effect, like right now, and then possibly, what was that book, The Butterfly Effect or something?
Oh, yeah.
Something where one thing happened and then
and also, there's individual karma, but there's group karma. So I was thinking more about that and thinking about Mahatma Gandhi and freeing the Indian nation from the British rule. Well, who was influenced by him? Martin Luther King. He took those ideas of civil disobedience and nonviolence and he applied it to the civil rights movement. Now look where that's gone. I mean, and everything, there's these actions that we have can have, as you said, ripple effects.
Yeah.
You have something.
To kind of bring it back into the book as well, and also what you were saying, Elise, we have habits. And that's the most specific term I like to think of what karma is.
Mm.
It's our habits. I personally have recognized in myself a habit that when I've been hurt by somebody, I want to shield my heart and make it so I'm not going to get hurt again, right? Because it's painful. And that's our habit, is to stone up inside. And it takes a lot of effort to be able to say, I'm actually going to choose not to do that. I'm going to instead soften and open my heart. And I'm going to recognize that this person who hurt me, they have their own needs, their own need for security, usually, and their own desire for happiness, and to try to connect with them in a compassionate manner. And he says on page 136, bad habits become habits in a very precise sense. They narrow the scope of perspective and are extremely predictable. So, and why are they predictable? Because they're habits. And it's so easy for our bad actions to become habitual because they are often intended to be protective for us, to protect ourselves. Good habits, in contrast, do not lead us to do the same thing over and over. That's why it's so hard. Good things don't become habits.
Yeah, that's bad.
Why? Because they're not about me.
And they're not habits like I'm not repeating the same thing. It's I'm open to what's there and seeing what needs to happen.
Yes.
So I don't walk in and say, I have a student I work with who was having a really, really, really horrible time. And he came in today and he was doing all this stuff that I was like, my first reaction was to sit down, settle yourself, let's get down to work. Because that would have made my life easy.
Right.
And I could have been a good teacher.
And it was about you.
And it was about me and having it go the way I wanted. And I realized I had to walk over and say, what do you need to do now? Tell me what's happening. And he told me. And he just, you could just see.
Yeah.
And I said, and what do we need to do? And I called and got someone to work with him. But it's the opening to seeing what's really happening in the world and then dealing with that and not dealing with I want the world to be the way I like it.
Yeah.
Because that would make it easy. I would know what's going to happen next every time.
It'll be predictable.
Which isn't ever true.
Yeah.
And along the line of the bad habits, you know, there's so many people in public life who are narcissistic, and it really gets so boring because they're all the same. They you can predict what they're going to say because, I mean, every narcissist I know is, like, in my family, we have many, and we have them in public life, and my family, we're always comparing them to each other. So, you know, my husband's just like my mother, you know.
Well, I like to point at my own narcissism.
Yeah.
And try to work with that, because we all have our neurotic nature. Some people in power have
we
a lot
all,
more.
We all have some, yeah.
Have a lot more power to allow their neuroticism to blossom
and spread and
yes.
spread and
yes.
spread. Which, you know, one thing that's said in here in terms of these main points about karma is about the importance of character. So, how do we work with our situation? And to the view as working with our situation to improve our character and our habits. And one thing he mentioned was the practice of the paramitas. So I just wanted to refresh our memory on the paramitas. So there are six. So generosity. So these are things we can strengthen that help us. As in your example too about, you know, basically opening the space, that's being generous. Generosity, discipline, patience, exertion, meditation, and transcendent virtue, which is prajnaparamita, which is transcendent knowledge. So those are, so working on expanding the things that are virtuous actually will help us to be more benefit and I think be a better, you know, to really have live a better life. And developing virtue. Sorry?
Could you say this one more time?
Yeah. Yes. So there are the six paramitas, and you can look, the website to never forget is called Rigpa Wiki, RIGPAWIKI. And that's the place to go if you want to look up anything having to do with Buddhism. So look under paramita, paramita. So it's generosity, discipline, patience, exertion, meditation, and transcendent virtue, which is, it's a hard thing to translate, so we use the word prajna paramita. Prajna is insight or sharpness or intelligence, knowledge gone beyond. So all these are gone beyond. They're transcendent virtues because they're not full of ego. And we're not being patient just so we're going to get our way later or whatever. They're really transcendent virtues. Yes?
Can you mention that website again, please?
Yes. Rigpa, RIGPA. Mm-hmm. Wiki, WIKI. .org, I guess, isn't it?
If you just look up,
you
can
find
it.
It's like Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's same idea.
Is that two
Wikipedia.
Different words?
One word.
One word.
No, it's one word.
Oh, it is one
yeah.
word.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Rigpa Wiki. But you can find anything. Like, you know, I was in D.C. Actually, a person I knew from high school, I stayed with her in D.C. And she worked for the State Department. She has a really interesting background. And her husband is from New Zealand. And he, you know, so anyway, I thought she was a Quaker because she worked at the Quaker thing here in Cambridge a long time ago. But it turns out she wasn't. And we talked about Buddhism, and her husband was really, really critical. And I was trying to explain things, and I was trying to figure it out what to say. And I couldn't even think of the three marks. And they are basically about impermanence, suffering, and egolessness. And what makes you not a Buddhist, which is a book everybody hated that we read.
I loved it.
Oh, good. We had one person that loved it.
I liked that one too.
Oh, good. There were some people that loved it. What's that?
What makes you not a Buddhist?
What makes you not a Buddhist? It's a great book, And I couldn't remember those three things. So, there I am, on my iPad in my bedroom, like, what was that again? The three marks of existence. So use that website for anything,
It's .org.
Oh, it's .org. Okay. Yes. And you can find anything on there having to do with Buddhism. If you forget all these terms, just look
and
it up.
And the book you're all...
The book was called What Makes You Not a Buddhist.
Right. That's the one you're reading now.
We're reading Karma by Traleg. Traleg. And you should look at our website. Do you know our website?
No.
It's very WalthamBuddhist.org. There's a paper back there you can take that gives it to. And actually, all our talks are recorded, and you can look on the website and listen to them. But there's a lot of information on the website. So
I think we did that in Unit Module 4 a long time ago.
Yeah, it was pretty far back. What makes you not a Buddhist? The story there is this teacher, Dzongsar Kensei Rinpoche, was sitting on the plane next to somebody, and they were just having a conversation, and the person said, well, what makes you a Buddhist? What's a Buddhist? And so he wrote this book, What Makes You Not a Buddhist? So not following these things or not understanding these things. But really, impermanence, so this guy I was talking to, he got impermanence. Like, he really explained exactly what impermanence was. And I couldn't remember the other two things that were important. But suffering, it was so obvious. And impermanence, suffering. And usually where we get hung up a lot is on egolessness, because we have such a solid sense of, this is me, and I am Emily, and I have this history, and this is it. And what Buddhism is really about is really shaking that up and making us look more deeply into the solidification and all the ways we solidify. And the biggest one is really this fixation on self. So,
which is not helpful in our current society either.
Oh no!
I mean, the pinnacle of the individual.
That's it.
In the U.S., I mean, we have a long history of the individual, the hardy individual, making everything happen, which has just reinforced this idea that we're separate from everyone around us.
Right. Yeah. You can see the long term effect of that. Yes.
I just found in reading this book that it just was very helpful, and just, again, how to be a good person.
Yeah.
I find myself really resisting the whole rebirth idea, and kind of go back to sort of what Craig said about, how do we know this? Like, to me, it's a story in some ways, and it's good to hear that people say that there are examples. I don't know that. I haven't heard any. So, but like, I do find myself saying, come on. it's everybody has their belief system, and at this point in time, it doesn't really sit with me. But what's useful with that for me is to see how I'm resisting.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, I've had to sit here and just say, okay, Janet, learn it. Just be open and learn. Sit and say, this is crazy, what's going, so that's been useful just in that alone for me to just sort of see my reaction to something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Another thing that has shaped this for me is I found in my life that there are moments when, I call it moments of grace, where I accidentally did something that was right, and I didn't think, I just did it, and it was the right thing, and out of that came perhaps some healing for somebody. And this has happened a number of times in hospice, in my hospice work, where I just happened to say the right thing that unloaded this person's past, which they had kept bottled up for 97 years. World War II vets. And so as I do more of this kind of work, I found that those moments come not from a place of thought. They just come from being really present with that person, and it just comes out. And for lack of a better term, I call it from the gut, because my heart often misleads me.
Right.
So I think it was coming from the gut. And so when I'm working with this concept of rebirth, I'm actually trying not to think about it. I'm trying not to say, you know, does it make sense? Is there evidence? You know, and all this stuff that the brain really wants to feel secure. Because we want to be right. We really want to be right, which means that there's a wrong. So I think what I've tried to do is sit with the idea, the whole concept here in my gut, and let my gut lead me through this. And what I've found is I don't have a clear answer that my brain likes. And I'm okay with that. I'm more okay with that, I should say. I'm not perfectly okay with it because there's a part of me that really wants it to be one way or another. But it's definitely leading me in the right direction. And for me, that direction is that the idea that I voiced before, which is that every moment we're being reborn. And so if I make it down into more bite-sized pieces, instead of looking at it as, oh, this thing that is being reborn after I die, that's out there.
But you can actually do more research on it. And there are books, like, I mean, this is within the Tibetan Buddhist tradition and other traditions, but there, Chagdu Tuku, his name is, his mother was called a Dekyang, there's a word for it. It's someone who actually can go back, can actually so-called die and visit people and that have passed over that border and bring back information. And there's a tradition of that.
A medium,
yeah. There's a tradition of that. But you have to see where we are in our culture, which is very materialistic. Yes?
Well, just kind of going on Jenna's comment, I guess my only... Actually, it kind of makes sense to me, the whole rebirth thing from like a gut level thing, but I guess what I worry about, and this is something I guess you can say with a lot of Buddhist philosophy in some ways, but going back to the slavery example, like the way that karma and philosophy around karma has led to a justification for structural inequalities.
Right.
And
They mentioned that in one of the
I think that's reincarnation is the justification, but not necessarily
rebirth.
Yeah.
I guess historically the way that Buddhist societies have used karma as a way to justify various class systems and
not Buddhist, so Buddhism. You're confusing with
Hinduism. Hinduism did.
Which Buddhism was drawn from because of its saying, no, you're not in a class system.
Right.
That was a major point of divergence for Buddhism from Hinduism.
Mm-hmm. Does that sound right to you, Kumar?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Hinduism, they divided into the different religions.
Mm-hmm.
Buddhism, no.
Yeah.
That's the advantage we had.
Right.
Buddhism say, no, everybody is a body and you are a god. Yeah. They don't say that, okay, there's a god. They say that you are a god. You are playing for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Buddha say, wow. But Hinduism, we have the 2 million star god, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had their own god.
Yeah.
So different.
And it was a real strong caste system.
Yeah.
So where you were born really set
which region you born, which family you born. And as of now, as well, some of the family members, they don't drink the water from that house.
Mm-hmm.
So much discrepancy are there in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what about like if you were like poor, and you're like, this is like my karmic situation, I'm going to accept what it is, and then not, because it's karma, maybe it gives you less drive or push to like improve your circumstances.
You know, you have to accept that.
Right.
That's a misunderstanding.
No, you can say, I want to look at this, and maybe it doesn't always have to be that way.
He talks about that.
This is where it is at this moment.
Right.
But I don't have to buy into that I deserve this as a fate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like the example that you gave earlier, Frederick Douglass.
Right.
Right.
He didn't accept his circumstance.
Right.
No, we could feel that we were born into this horrible, disgusting world that we're in.
I can't hear you.
We could feel that we're born into this world as some kind of punishment.
But we also could feel that we're here because
there are many
it means
for that.
It needs what we can bring.
Right, that's what Michael was saying.
Yeah, I think that's really, you know, the piece,
like,
so that you can be there because the energy you have is to make a change, not just for yourself. What can I, so not like make, you know, I'm going to get ahead, but like what's the structure that needs to change so that people, all these people around me aren't depressed. So, you know, it doesn't say like.
And it, I mean, in the examples that I gave, you know, Nelson Mandela came out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of saying, rise up and take power and condemn those who've done this to us, he exerted compassion. And he chose instead to take a healing approach. And very carefully, I mean, it was such a flashpot right there waiting to explode. And he doused it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you think, he spent all those years in prison, suffering, but he chose not to accept his situation as a way of closing down his heart.
Mm-hmm.
He instead reworked that into something that allowed him to connect with people, connect with his own prisoners.
Right.
And the people that were guards. Right there, his guards. You know, there's a relationship there by the end.
He learned their language.
He learned, yeah.
And there are many guards who are devoted to him.
Yeah.
So I think any other comments people have or contributions?
I just want to talk to Megan. I know I said this already, but I'm just for sort of intellectual purity on my part, I don't see the rebirth as metaphor as the same as what you're talking about, rebirth, like choosing who you're going to be born as, or choosing your next birth. In other words, what I'm saying, rebirth is metaphor, that every moment really is a rebirth. So to me, that's a metaphor. That's like, it's a way of saying it is like a rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
And I accept that.
Right.
And I also accept what Craig was saying about that everything you do really does have an effect. And that's a feeling, that's a very powerful feeling. I mean, it just
mm-hmm.
feels like, that feels very real. I don't like when it doesn't feel logical to me to then say if one accepts that every moment is a rebirth, then that means, or somehow that leads to the other.
Oh, no, I'm not saying
that. That's
not
a logical argument.
Okay,
no,
so
no.
That's not what
it's
people
No,
say.
I'm just saying, you, if you can't, if rebirth is something you're not prepared to go to, or just it's not... It's not working for you.
Right.
Try this. It's just a way of working with it on a moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it will lead there. I'm saying it did for me.
Oh, okay.
But absolutely not going to say that it will logically lead there, because that's just the point I made about it coming from the gut. There's very little logic in there.
Michael?
Susan, is it more sensible for you to say everything I do matters?
Has an effect.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
makes sense.
Everything I do is important. There's no randomness to what I'm going to do.
Well, there could be a randomness to what I do, but it does.
Whatever I do matters.
Yeah, I get it. Now that's clear. I was just getting the sense, specifically from Megan, that you were saying, and I might have misinterpreted, that this was going to lead to the other thing.
I can't tell you what's going to lead anywhere for you.
Right.
I can only tell you where it went from there.
Right. And you don't have... it's not the turkey and being force-fed here. There's no force-feeding.
Yeah.
It's actually a passive discovery. So the point is, and I'll say it 1,000 times, question... and explore, and if you go, well, really? People actually died and have some reports? Well, look into it. Geez, you know, find out. And maybe that doesn't make any sense to you. And you're coming from a different point of view. But I think the point is we have to see that even right now we're sitting here and we happen to be human beings, but we could be fish in water and we would see a completely different world. You know, we would be in a completely different world. So I think I think it's
we
about...
We wouldn't see water.
We wouldn't see the water. That's it was right. just home. That just means home. So we all have our biases just by having a body, and we share some common karma just because we're humans. So there are lots of other ways of seeing things and a lot of other beings. So there's a lot on this topic, and I feel this book is a good introduction, but and it should raise more questions than it answers, and I think it really does. So we'll continue.